Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning, friends. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and today is Wednesday, May 17th. It is the 138th day of the year. Talk about zipping by. We're only 228 days left of this year. And did you know on this day in 1792, the New York Stock Exchange was formed? That's when people started putting their money in the market. And also on this day, I found this interesting, in 2006, this is just kind of a weird news item, former Beatle Paul McCartney separated from his second wife. In the statement, the 63-year-old McCartney and his 38-year-old wife, she blamed the split on the nonstop media intrusion. Hey, Heather, newsflash, you're marrying a Beatle. There's going to be media intrusion for the rest of your life. Ugh, I don't know. All right, here's another poll that came from Gallup. It said that 71% of Americans still believe the Bible is inspired by God. That's a good thing. However, fewer than one in four Americans believe the Bible to be the actual Word of God, and it is to be taken literally word for word. The poll shows 26% see the Bible as a book of fables, legends, history, and moral precepts recorded by man. 47% of Americans believe the Bible is inspired by God. I'm in that group. We got problems when it comes to the Bible. They're not. We got a lot of skeptics out there and a lot of pushback and persecution, and it is getting watered down, and we need to read the Bible and have the Holy Spirit lead us, instruct us, guide us, and then we need to live strongly in it and show our hope and our love and do it with grace to others, because that's how they're going to hear about the truth and see the truth and experience God's love is through us. So we got to be equipped as we go out there today to be aware and ready. It says in Romans 12, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. We need to do more of that. Be devoted to one another. Honor one another above yourselves. That's kind of hard to do because we're a little self-absorbed at times. I should speak for myself. But yeah, it could be problematic. We need to try to honor others and put them first, put their needs first, even in front of ours. Wow, there's a bold statement. Probably won't need to take that back because I'm not doing that. Although I'm going to try today. You know, it always says love your neighbor as yourself. And I think what Jesus was saying, are you willing to put the same energy into meeting others' needs as you are meeting your own needs? And the answer is that not often. So that's something I'm going to try to work on today. But it says be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. And if you are in affliction today, like many of us are, you're suffering, and suffering is never fun. And sometimes you wonder where God is and all that. And I trust me, he's right there with you. He hasn't left. He hasn't gone anywhere. He's right there. Okay? All right, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we are going to talk to our friend Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com. And if you are in that season of life where maybe you're thinking about starting a new business and you've got it in your gut to start off on your own, there's going to be some core things you're going to need to know to start a business, and Bill's going to provide those suggestions in just a minute. We'll be right back. It is 9 minutes after the hour. Good morning. So glad you are with us today listening. Bill Arnold here, and welcome to all of our listening friends in Hartford at 94.1 FM and 93.1 FM in Waterloo, 104.7 FM in Madison, and here in the Twin Cities at 90.7 FM. And if you have the Faith Radio app, you're cool. I got to tell you, you are really very cool. And all you have to do is open that app, and boom, it starts streaming online. There you hear us. So, you know, recommend that to your friends, too, as a great way to hear the show and to also get the podcast, because you can't always listen to the show all the time unless you're my mom, you know. So anyway, let's move on to BibleandBusiness.com. Wednesdays, we always like talking to Bill English. And if you are thinking about starting your own business, you got to pay attention. Get out a notebook and a pen and get ready to take some stuff down. Bill, hi.
Hey,
Why don't you have them call in if they're want to start a business? Maybe they can ask a question or two.
Okay. 1-877-933-2484. You've been thinking about this for a while. I'm going to start a business. What absolutely do I need to know, or what question do you have for Bill English? Give us a call, 1-877-933-2484. If you don't want to go on the program, you can try emailing me, bill@myfaithradio.com, and I'll just read Bill English, your question. All right, let's get started, Bill.
Yep.
What are some core things you need to do to start a business?
Well, pretty much people know that you have to write a business plan. You have to determine the legal structure of your business. You got to get a business name. If there's any licenses and permits that you need to run your business, then you got to go get those. You got to register to pay your various taxes. And, you know, those are the basic things that everybody knows about when it comes to starting a business. I don't think many people start businesses without doing those basic things. Although I got to admit, I've seen a number of businesses now that I think about it, where they start the business, but they don't have a business plan. They just got ideas floating in the Ethernet and hoping that they'll all coalesce into something called a plan down the road. So,
okay, it sounds like just the start of this sounds more legal and technical than passionate. I mean, most people go, they have all these emotions and passion, and you're saying register a business name, pay taxes, get license and permits.
Yeah, the legal stuff
you
is real
fun
important.
Out of it.
I do. You know,
yeah.
It's what I do in life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just Bill the Killjoy, you know.
I'm glad you said it, not me.
So the legal aspect is important. What most entrepreneurs love is the idea.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
They're creative. I've got this cool new whiz-bang yellow kangaroo, and it bounces higher than any other kangaroo. And, you know, and I think I can sell this to all the kangaroo lovers out there,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yes.
And they love the idea, and so they immediately open up Excel, and they think, how many of these yellow bouncing kangaroos can I sell? And they I bet I can sell 500 of them a week because people are going to love yellow bouncing kangaroos. And before you know it, they've got a business on paper that's, you know, worth $10 or $20 million.
Really?
And but it's all just numbers pulled out of the
air.
Oh,
right. It's just all made up.
It's all made up.
Yeah.
Because they love the idea and it's their creative juices flowing.
So they focus on their crazy good idea, which everyone has told them, oh, this would be awesome. So they've got a lot of advice. Probably from sources that aren't super helpful.
Well, some of them have people in their lives that goes, this is a horrible idea.
That's true, too.
And these entrepreneurs are going,
no, it
isn't. You're
Bill
wrong.
Bill the wet blanket's coming back.
Yeah, you know, the Killjoy's
the
coming
Killjoy.
Back.
Yes.
And they have reasonable voices in their lives, but they don't pay attention to them.
Okay.
So, because they don't like people raining on their parade, right?
Good point.
But they muster forward because every great company had its detractors in the beginning, and I'm just going to be another great company with beginning detractors. So,
okay, so I don't want to fail. I want to start a business,
yep.
And I got an idea. I think
yep.
It's pretty good.
Yep.
People have told me, I think it's got a possibility. So, you know, yeah. I'm not discouraged. Other people are going, you're nuts. I hold those two conflicts in my head, and now I have to, I don't want to fail. So what do I focus on? What are some of the things that I need to be intentional about focusing on?
Well, you need to focus on, believe it or not, you need to really sit down and just be brutally honest with yourself and probably be brutally honest with some other people about really what you think that this product or service can sell for. And what the expenses are going to be to produce that product or services. So you have to look at your COGS. COGS is cost of goods sold. So a cost of good is every time you make a sale, you incur an expense. So
mm-hmm.
the traditional example of that is a sales commission. Let's say Rebecca were to go out and sell a yellow kangaroo at $1,000, and
yep.
I gave her $100 for doing that.
$200. Give her $200.
$200,
okay.
Cheap. Okay, $300.
Reward her. She's working hard.
Yeah, and she's a nice person,
yes, she
too.
Is.
I know.
Yeah, and she
so
closed the deal.
So it's $400
now.
Now
we're $400.
I'm doing really well.
Yeah.
You are. You may not work here anymore, right? So, but every time she sells a yellow kangaroo, I have to pay her $400. If
right.
she doesn't sell anything, I don't owe the $400.
Right.
That's a cost of goods sold.
Okay.
I only have the expense when I make a sale. So you have to understand what your cost of goods are, but you also have to understand what your fixed expenses are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
At Platinum, where I work, we have people contacting us every week with new business ideas, and rarely do they come in with a great pro forma P&L, profit and loss statement, that lists out realistically what they can sell and what all their expenses are going to be. Almost always they come in with, here's the income possibilities. And we just kind of look and go, you've got to be kidding. You've got to have the expenses in there. You got to know what your break even is. You have to know what your profitability is going to be, and you have to know how you're going to sell these things. And so we usually ask them to go away and do the hard work that isn't about their idea, that's not creative, that doesn't get their juices flowing, but it's work that has to be done before they start a business.
Okay, we have to we're going to go to break in about a minute, Bill, but we need cash flow, we need money, and everything requires money, 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 money. And then it requires ownership. If I'm putting up money as an investor, let's say, you're going to make me a big owner in this deal. And
yeah, you know, this is the first rub, and maybe we should handle this after the break.
Right, we will.
But, you know, this is the first rub that entrepreneurs face is how much ownership do they give up to get investors to invest in their business?
Right. So when we come back, we'll pick it up there. Bill English, BibleandBusiness.com. Our subject is getting a business started. If you have a question, it's going to be Bill that's going to answer it, not me, but the other Bill. 1-877-933-2484 or Bill at MyFaithRadio.com. I'll read your question over the air to Bill, and he will answer it. We'll be back in just a minute. All right, welcome back. It is 18 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here talking to Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com. All right, I want to talk money here, investments. I want to say, how do we get any new business started, funded? Let's just say, for example, I walk into a bank and the pens are chained to the desk, so they trust no one. What kind of person do they want to see walking in? Someone who's really excited or someone who's got a well-laid-out plan?
Okay, first of all, most banks don't invest in new businesses.
Okay.
So let's just disabuse ourselves of
that
notion.
There's the killjoy.
Now, raining on the parade.
Yes, once again.
We do know some banks here in the Twin Cities that do invest in new businesses, but they're going to be SBA loans, and the ownership group is going to have to put in a fair amount of skin on their own. And so is it possible to get a bank to invest? Yes. Is it probable? No. In my estimation, there are 14 funding sources for a business. A bank is only one of them.
Okay.
So you can go to family and friends. You can find investors. There's angel investors and other, you know, private equity investors and those kinds of things. Angel investors who are going to invest in a new business are taking a big risk, and they're mainly investing in you, not the business, because you're the one with the idea. You're the one with the passion. You're the one who's all, you know, hyped up about this thing, and you're the one who's going to drive this thing forward, and they're going to look at you. Can he manage? Is he trustworthy? Does he know how to run the books? Can he really pull this idea off? Does he have the background to do it? So forth and so on. And so they're going to be investing in you, and yet they're still going to want control of the company. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to give you $500,000 or $1 million, guess what I want? I want control.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be the guy running the show at the end of the day who has to make the tough decisions. And this is where a lot of entrepreneurs go, but, well, wait a minute. My idea is really, really big, and it's really important, and it's really valuable, and I'll give you 10% for your $1 million.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the investors go, you know, hey, you know, you're a great guy. God love you. I'm going down the street and knocking on another door.
Have a nice day.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So when investors do look at things, they're mostly concerned with, all right, the skill set that this person has and the vision that the business has. But are they also interested in who the competition is and how they're going to get their money back?
Oh, yeah. They want to know who the competition is. Why hasn't somebody else thought of this? Has somebody else thought of this? Are they already doing it? If you really do have a novel idea, which you probably don't.
Right.
But if you do have a novel idea and you have a novel product or service, then is it patentable? Can we trademark the branding around it, that kind of thing? Is it a process we can patent? In other words, is there real IP here that we can go after, IP meaning intellectual property?
Mm-hmm.
Is there real intellectual property that we can go after? And if all of that exists, then they're still going to want to know, how fast do we get to cash flow? you know, from the time that I give you my $1 million and maybe I give it in $200,000 increments, how fast can I get to the point where I'm getting money back out? Because that's what investors are. They're investing to get money back. They're not investing to make you a great businessman or woman. Mm-hmm. They're investing to get their money back.
Mm-hmm. All right, Bill, I've got a question from a caller.
Sure.
Emily wrote in and she said, I'd like to start a uniquely Christian business that seeks to minister to women in crisis pregnancies. All right. So she's a middle school teacher.
Okay.
She's currently home with small children, and she feels like she needs a business mentor. She has no idea where to go get that.
Well, ironically, I just came off the board at the Robbinsdale Women's Center,
okay,
which is a ministry that works with women in crisis who are pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's welcome to give me a call. If you can just dialogue with her offline, she's welcome to call me, and I'll talk with her. But she's looking to do a ministry. So here, when you want to start a ministry, it's different than starting a business. A business, the investors are going to look for a profit. In ministry, your donors are going to look for a cause that they think that you can be successful at meeting the need of that cause. And so she needs to look for people who will donate.
Okay. Now let's get to the most important part of all, and that is starting a business is a big deal.
It is.
And what does the Bible say about it?
You know, the Bible doesn't talk directly about starting a business.
Okay.
There are no thou shalts or verily, verilies
okay.
on starting a business, right? But it does talk about risk and the assumption of risk. So anytime you start a business, you're assuming risk. And this is where husbands and wives sometimes can have some difficulties. But risk, I define as an exposure to change, to the chance of injury or loss. Proverbs 22:3 says...
Okay, say that one more time, Bill.
Risk is an exposure to chance of injury or loss.
Risk is an exposure to chance?
To the chance
of injury,
of
or,
injury
loss.
Okay, or loss.
Perfect.
Okay. And so Proverbs 22:3 says, and University of Northwestern just popped up on my browser. There you go. A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it.
I don't know what that means.
So the prudent man is going to see the danger. A prudent entrepreneur is going to see the risks as they really are, not how you wish they were, but as they really are, and you're going to take refuge. Now, refuge is going probably will include insurance.
Okay.
Okay. Probably is going to include getting a lot of advice and letting people rain on your parade so that you have a more realistic view of what you're going to do with your business. And then also just learning how to make prudent decisions.
Okay. I like that. Proverbs 10:3 says, "The Lord does not let the righteous go hungry." Comment on that, because I bet there's callers who could say, I was a righteous guy and my business was gone after a while.
It doesn't mean that verse doesn't mean that you will be protected from injury or loss. It just means that if God has called you to take this risk, he will provide for you. And look, if you assume a risk because of your sin, because of your arrogance, because you're going somewhere where you shouldn't be going and God hasn't called you, I think you lose God's protection in that moment.
So there's pride and ego getting involved in this equation.
Oh, yeah.
And that can be deleterious. Did I say that word right?
You did. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You and went to college, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Don't ask to see my transcripts.
All right, I won't.
Yeah, they're not pretty.
All eight of them.
Yeah, right. I graduated in the 80s, and it took me so long to graduate that my graduation ring said 1980, and the last number was on a wheel. You just kind of spun to the year you got out.
I graduated in 83. When did you graduate?
81.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were that much older than me.
Well, I am.
You know, you look younger.
I do.
Yeah.
You worry about a lot more stuff than I do.
I do.
That's part of the problem. You think way too hard.
I do.
Yeah, the killjoy, Bill.
Just ask my wife and family. They'll tell you.
Right. Anyway, okay. Thanks for coming into the studio.
You bet.
Our new improved studio, in a way. I say that tongue-in-cheek.
I like this studio.
I do, too.
It's a good one.
Yeah. They're revamping the main studio, and we're in kind of a side studio today. And
yeah.
It's kind of like summer camp.
It is.
Happening in May.
Yeah.
All right. When we come back, we're going to hear some more news. And, Bill, I want to actually, if you don't mind, pick up this conversation next week. There's way more to talk about on the principles of risk for a Christian business owner.
All right.
Sound
we'll
good?
We'll do it.
Awesome.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks.
Be back in a minute. 25 minutes almost until the top of the hour. My math could be a little off there, but it's headed towards the top of the hour. We're going to take a little news break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about supporting and engaging in the local church. And many people say they love God, but they don't love church. So how do we learn to love the church the way that Jesus loves the church? We're going to talk to Pastor John Somerville after the news. Be back in a minute. Minutes until the top of the hour. Prayer is vital to seeing real revival in the church and in the world. Pastor Jim Cimbala points to James chapter 4 and verse 3.
You had not because you asked not. Now that's a tragedy. To live your life and find out God could have done so much more, but for only one reason, you didn't ask. And that kind of effectual, fervent prayer, James says, makes tremendous power available. And more Christians now, with their children wandering away from God, their churches dry and dead and lifeless, they're getting desperate, and they're going to start calling on God, and then we're going to see God move. Because if God doesn't answer prayer, then you have to throw the whole Bible out, because if that's not true, nothing's true. Mm-hmm. God is a prayer-answering God.
You can hear that full interview on our website at myfaithradio.com. That's Jim Cimbala, the pastor and author. Take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to another pastor, John Somerville from City Church in Minneapolis. Be right back.
The single most common question parents ask me is, what is the most important thing I can do as a parent to help my kids? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Parents always seem somewhat surprised when I tell them that the most important thing they can do is join a small group. As a mom or dad, you're going to face challenges that will test your patience, endurance, and faith. There will be days when you feel like stepping down as a parent and looking for another job with less stress and better pay. That's why we need people around us who can offer help when we're struggling, celebrate when things are going well, and listen when life is spiraling out of control. Parenting is a daunting assignment, so make things a little easier for yourself, and don't go it alone.
Find more parenting help from Mark Gregston when you go online to parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
It's almost 22 until the top of the hour. Bill Arnold with you this morning. You know, John Somerville is the pastor of City Church here in the Twin Cities, and that's citychurchmpls.org. And as we think about the Lord's Prayer, it starts with Our Father, and I think Christianity really means community and the importance of engaging and supporting a local church. We're going to talk to John about that this morning. John, welcome.
Well, it's good to be with you.
As always. Now, many people say they really love God. I think I see that especially among millennials. They say they love God, but they don't like church. Huh.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, you hear people say, I can take a walk in the woods and be with God. I even read a blogger a year or so ago who confessed he rarely went to church. He hated singing. He said, churches don't engage me. And he said, you know, most of my friends don't go to church. We've kind of graduated from that. And I think there is some of that going on today.
Uh-huh. And, you know, to decide that you're going to experience God in nature seems a little silly, although you can experience the glory of God's creation. When you encounter the real God, you're up against something very intense and very powerful. And I think this excuse that we've outgrown God does make me laugh a little bit.
Sure, and I think that, you know, part of the problem, and by the way, I'm biased here, so admit,
right.
A pastor challenging his people to go to church is like a dentist telling you to floss.
Right. Which, by the way, I do.
Good.
Yes.
I'm glad.
Yes.
You know, I think the challenge is that we really need to understand and embrace what Jesus, the purpose for the church. Jesus is the physical body of Christ, and we say we love Jesus. And body number one was his presence here on earth. After Jesus ascended, he said, the church is the body of Christ. In other words, if we really love Jesus, we also need to love the church.
Mm-hmm.
One of the church fathers, Cyprian, said, you cannot have God as your father unless you have the church as your mother. And I think we really need to embrace that, to be a part of a community of faith in the church and make a commitment to it.
So when we think about supporting and engaging in the local church, we sometimes find people shop for churches the way they would almost shop for a sweater. It's like, well, what's going to meet my needs? And I've got needs. And is that really the way we should go about investing in and engaging in the local church?
Well, I don't think there's any question that the church should meet our needs. But I think we have to think more deeply and I think more comprehensively about it. I have a good friend who's in a church that's going through some challenges, and he's older than I am and wiser than I am, and we were together recently, and he said, you know, he said, I'm not going to bail. He said, this is my church, and I need to be here for through thick or thin. My wife has a friend, to contrast this, who said to her once, she said, well, right now we're at, and named a church. In other words, I'm going to be here right now, and then I'm going to change, and this is a person who's probably been to six or seven churches in 25 years. I think we need to have less of a consumer mindset and think about what we can get out of it. But we also need to think about what we can give and how we can meet the needs of others and what God has for us by just staying faithful to a church community.
Mm-hmm. Because sometimes the whole point of going to church some days, in addition to worshiping God, is maybe God is going to put you in a place to be a source of real encouragement to somebody who really needs to hear whatever it might be you have to say. Maybe it's just a few kind words or a smile. And maybe it's as simple as that.
Well, you know, each week when we gather in a church community, there are people who are hurting. There are people who need love. There are people who can be cared for in ways that perhaps only you can care for them. And so you can take a walk in the woods, or you can set aside your preferences and gather with others and meet and think about meeting their needs. One is a selfish way to think about it, and the other is a more selfless way mm-hmm. to think about it.
Now, John, obviously we all know the church isn't perfect, of course, and there's nothing but sinners that attend, and sinners can cause hurt and disappointment. So the question is, how do we best deal with the challenges of just living our faith out in that community where there's going to be conflict, hurt, and disappointment?
You know, I think there are a number of things we could say. One is that we just need to give each other grace. Sure, there are people that do really unthoughtful, even unkind things in a church context. But let's give each other grace, and let's ask for forgiveness when we're the ones that offend others. Let's just remember that this is a community that we have to be a community of grace, a place of love. And we've got to do that in really concrete ways. And I think also we need to remember that the church is a community that is centered on our common bond to Jesus Christ, not our natural affinity. One of the experiences I've had is people that I would have never chosen as friends end up being some people who are very dear to me because through Jesus, we have found a common bond that just supersedes anything that we might have humanly.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to go to break here in just a minute, John, but I'm just curious, what are some of the things that we're saying to you as a pastor that you maybe don't appreciate hearing? We're showing up to church and we're saying things that maybe make you roll your eyes. Can you think of anything?
Probably more than I should say. But, you know, I think sometimes just the mindset that this is about me, and that's troubling. But I don't know. I don't try to dwell on those things.
Okay.
It's not something
but, I mean,
it's still, not helpful.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what we do is as imperfect sinners that walk into a church and we say stupid things to our pastor, like, well, what, do you just work one day a week?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, more with John Somerville, pastor at City Church here in Minneapolis. That's citychurchmpls.org. You want to go see his good-looking face. We're going to take a break. Be right back. Good morning. It's almost 10 minutes till the top of the hour. how do we love the church we have instead of the church we don't have? Sometimes we're always focusing on what we don't have. And I'm talking to Pastor John Somerville from City Church in Minneapolis. And as I was talking to Rebecca, who is the producer here of the show, she is was asking a very interesting question, John. And I thought, that is a good question. So, Rebecca, why don't you ask John the question yourself?
Oh, well, good morning, Pastor John. It's great to have you with us on the show. I always learn so much when you're on with us. And I was wondering, we were discussing the importance to be more other-focused when we look at church, when we think, okay, ask not what your church can do for you, but what you can do for your church, so to speak. And I was thinking, if you get to the point where it feels like there's something missing, like maybe your needs aren't being met in that particular congregation, how do you know if it's just, me being selfish, or if there's really an issue there and that maybe you need to look elsewhere or make some changes? Is there a good way to know what's what?
Well, I think, listen, church choice is not exactly like a marriage, till death do us part. So I think there are times when it is time to make a change. And I think that there are a number of factors that play into that. I think one of the key things is the leadership healthy? Is it a healthy church context? And if there's dysfunction, if there's are there character issues among those who are leading the church, then I think those things are legitimate reasons to make a change. I think you have to look also at your family situation. If a church doesn't have a vital children's and student ministry and you have kids that are in elementary school or middle school and high school, that might be a time, at least for a season, to make a change. So there are a variety of reasons you have to factor all these things in, but sometimes you can be a part of the change in making a church a better place. So it's really a fine line. I think people ought to make a firm commitment to a church and recognize that there are times when things change.
Great answer, John. So really what I'm just trying to get at is loving the church that we have. And it sounds like we have a lot of opportunity for, as Christians. I was talking earlier to an author that says that Christians are becoming increasingly more bored and disillusioned about their faith. And I suppose that translates into a lackadaisical desire to go to church as well.
Well, I think, yeah, I think sometimes we talked about being consumers earlier. I think that plays into it. I was talking with someone who many people would know, a famous pastor at one time, and he complained a little bit. He said, what people say to me is they want to be fed. They want things to be deep. And he said, sometimes I just want to tell them to get out of their high chair, take their spoon, and go feed themselves. So sometimes we are simply responsible for our own faith. And part of I think one of the things we've done that's perhaps contributed to this consumerism is we've told people as pastors and churches that we can meet all their needs, and we can't. We really need to be places where we equip people to feed themselves.
Okay. And that's a great point. And I'm wondering, as you are watching your church grow over the years, are you finding that what percentage of people that are in your church are showing up to be serving and volunteering, and what percentage are staying back and just attending services and maybe staying off on the sidelines?
Well, there's always people use 80-20 rules, 70-30 rules. There always is a smaller proportion of people who are deeply embedded and deeply committed. I think, at least at City Church, we have a higher proportion of people who serve than maybe in some other church contexts. So I don't have as many complaints as I think others might do. But that always is a reality. I think that's a reality in any organization. The question is, can we move people from the fringe to the core? And as they move further in and develop more relationships, they naturally serve more.
Mm-hmm. Now, John, we also have just been talking about, how do we love the church we have? How do we love the pastor we have? And how do we best support that pastor in a role that, I have to admit, you have a hard job? This is a difficult calling because you have a lot of demands on your life, and you have to be interested in everybody and have time for everybody and do all the work that you do. So we just got big digital arms around you right now, just loving you for the job that all pastors do. How do you find yourself maintaining and thriving in this difficult environment?
Well, I think I'm not a whiner, and I don't want to be a whiner. So sometimes I think it's important to just step back and say, you know, I don't know. I don't try to do that as much. But I do think that there are a few things that people can do that really make a difference for helping a pastor lead well. There's one verse in the Bible that I've never preached on and I can't preach on, but it's in Hebrews 10. I think it's verse 25. It says, or verse 24, let us consider how we may spur one another. Oops, let's see. I'd opened my Bible here. But it essentially says, respect your leaders and don't make it difficult for them to lead you well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really important. Don't make it a burden for your leaders. I think that probably the best things that people do for me are pray for me, encourage me, say something, you know, when they see a decision made or a sermon preached or something that they find helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And then just pitch in, just jump in and say, you know, how can we help? How can we do something here to make this church more effective?
Yeah. And that ultimately serves the church, and it demonstrates the love and the community that I think that God calls us to. And it ends up being a much healthier church, doesn't it?
Certainly. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I just have all kinds of respect for the pastors. And every time we have a pastor on the show, I just want to let them know how much we appreciate you and how vital you are to the growth and discipleship of the flock. And, you know, it's just it's a wonderful calling. And I just want to say we love you and we honor you. And it's awesome what you're doing, even though God's called you to do it. I still think it's awesome.
Well, thank you.
So as we're just wrapping up here, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and when summertime hits in the church, and then we start figuring out what we're going to be doing over summer vacations, and people are showing up less at church, do you have any message for the people up at the lake or people who don't attend as regularly in the summer?
Well, I think wherever you are, if you're away from town on a weekend, if you're someplace else, that's great. But find a church in the community to attend.
Okay.
I think that's important to do.
So in other words, don't take the Sunday off just because you're out of town. Make an effort to find a place
absolutely.
To go and worship.
Absolutely.
That's just spoken just like a pastor. John, thanks so much. The website is citychurchmpls.org. CITY churchmpls.org. You've been listening to Pastor John Somerville, a friend and pastor. We so appreciate you coming on the show. We'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Well, it's great to be with you.
Thanks so much. All right, 5 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a very short break and wrap things up. All right, a couple minutes until the top of the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning. We've got a great day coming up here on Faith Radio. We've got Connecting Faith at noon with the always consistent Neil Stavem, Susie Larson at 3, and lots of great Bible teaching throughout the day. Thank you so much for listening and for supporting us. I just enjoyed my conversation with Pastor John Somerville so much. He was looking for a passage in Hebrews. And Rebecca found it. Hebrews 13:17 says, have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account. Do this so that their work will be a joy, not a burden, for that would be of no benefit to you. So let's support our pastors. Let's love on them as much as best we can and know that that doing that will make their work a joy and not a burden. So just let you know, I am totally amused by the Texas dog, Huckleberry the Hound. He loves jumping up and sitting on the roof of the owner's house. He's even known as on Instagram as Huck the Roof Dog. The Texas dog is becoming a hit on Twitter after pictures of the pooch were tweeted. I watched the video. It's hilarious. The owners posted a sign in their front of their home that says, don't be alarmed. We know the dog's on the roof. The dog, yeah. The dog, yeah, it's on the roof. Don't worry. Don't tell us. We know it's up there. All right. I will be on my roof tonight looking just like Huck. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.